You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D. We have a full crew this week. Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely. Welcome, gang.
Hello.
So, it is... Aha! Super Bowl Sunday, but nobody cares about that, apparently.
Not until three more hours from now.
Very limited time, people. We got to go. Super Bowl is starting right after we get
We don't
done.
Really care about football, but what is it, the Puppy Bowl that we actually care about?
That's
is
the
that
important one. I know. You got to get in on the Puppy Bowl. So it is Fanboy versus the Rewatchmen. As we are going to discuss... The official rebirth of the Watchmen product in comic book form.
I'm just glad they didn't call it Watchmen 2, Watch Harder.
Yes. Any number of things.
Watchmen 2, Electric Boogaloo.
So, Chris McFeely, bring us up to speed. What's going on?
Okay, well, this is a thing that's happening, y'all. There are going to be... They haven't announced any confirmed dates for it. But it is supposed to be in the summer, and it is going to be 7 miniseries with a total of 34 miniseries issues, and I think there's also an epilogue. Yes, there's an epilogue issue as well. So 35 issues altogether, which will be shipped in such a way that one comes out every week. Yeah.
It's so it's
be
the 52, but it's not 52.
No, there are only 35 of them.
So, I'll just give my pretend initial reaction, which is, Watchmen. Well, I guess it's okay, maybe. Is it a prequel or is it a sequel?
It's a prequel, JD.
Oh, that's okay. Well, who are the creative teams? Because,
Well, I'll tell you, JD. On the Rorschach miniseries, which lasts 4 issues, it's being written by Brian Azzarello with art by Lee Bermejo, a team that we've seen before on the Joker hardcover and the Lex Luthor Man of Steel. Azzarello, well known for 100 Bullets. Bermejo just brought out the Batman Noel graphic novel. Minutemen is 6 issues long, and it's being written and drawn by Darwin Cook, who did DC The New Frontier. Comedian is 6 issues long, written by Azzarello again, with art by J.G. Jones, the artist of Final Crisis, who did all the covers to 52. Dr. Manhattan is 4 issues long, being written by J. Michael Straczynski, who needs no introduction. Spider-Man, Wonder awesome Woman, guy. Superman.
Thor.
Thor, indeed. We'll be talking a bit more about him later in the show. I'm talking about one of his current books later in the show, with art by Adam Hughes, who... has done a lot of things, but, you know, I'm hard-pushed to actually name a series he's worked on because he's so well-known for his beautiful painted covers that you see everywhere. Did a lot of Wonder Woman covers. Was supposed to be working on an all-star Wonder Woman series, but... Night Owl is 4 issues long, also being written by Straczynski, with art by Andy Kubert and his dad, Joe. That's awesome, because, you know, 2 generations of comic book artists writing a story about a multi-generational superhero. Ozymandias is 6 issues long, being written by Len Wein, who was the original editor for Watchmen, with art by Jay Lee, well known as the artist of the Submariner back in the 90s. Produced, I guess probably listeners of this podcast probably know him best as the artist of the Dreamwave World War II Transformers G.I. Joe crossover. Silk Spectre, 4 issues long, written by Darwin Cook, with art by the wonderful Amanda Connor, she of Power Girl and The Pro and various other things. What do you say to that, JD?
My head just exploded, just like, because it's like total paradigm shift, complete paradigm shift. I went waking up one day going, oh, DC's going to do that damn Watchmen thing. And then they're like, oh, by the way, it's a prequel, and it's all these awesome creators. So F you, fanboys, you're going to buy this shit.
Yeah, well, let's be honest, though, we were going to buy it anyway.
Probably, but there's
a
difference.
We were going to buy it to talk about it, but we didn't know if we would might enjoy it
there's
or not.
Yes, there's a difference, exactly, because there's a difference between buying it because you feel obligated and buying it because you actually might want to fucking read it.
Yeah. That is, I mean, the existence of this project is something of an open secret. They have had news has been leaked about this progressively, majorly through Bleeding Cool. For a long time now, possibly even over a year. So it surprised nobody whenever this was actually announced. But so the creative teams are fantastic, and if you were to put a gun to my head and tell me to buy only one, it would definitely be Silk Spectre.
Yes.
I don't think I'll buy every single one of these, but I'm definitely going to check a few of them out. Interestingly, the whole weekly format is allowing for a 2-page backup strip to be published in the back of each issue, written by Len Wein, with art by original series colorist John Higgins. It's going to be called Curse of the Crimson Corsair, evidently riffing on the Tale of the Black...
Black Freighter.
I think I was going to say Black Pearl, but that's a whole other pirate thing.
that one has Johnny Depp in it.
Right.
Well, I wonder which is better.
Oh, that Johnny Depp. Hello. Oh, yeah. I didn't even go there.
Catwoman,
of course, was one of Adam Hughes' big ones. That one just flashed through my head. Catwoman. Fantastic creative teams aside, the issue is still raised of there's people who are just up in arms, won't hear of it, but then they're not exactly wrong.
No, because prequels are not needed for Watchmen, because if you've read Watchmen.
I mean, that's the thing. Watchmen. No, Alan Moore actually helped write a prequel to Watchmen back in the 80s for the Mayfair role-playing games company. There's a Watchmen role-playing game that Mayfair put out, which is about the Crime Busters' first mission. First of all, well, we've had Alan Moore's take on this, which is, I don't want this to happen. I'm surprised that I'm surprised he managed to summon up enough of an emotion to comment on that. But frankly, I mean, it's pure hypocrisy on his part as a man who has co-opted dozens of other fictional characters produced by other authors and written stories about them that their original creators would never have approved of. I don't think he has a leg to stand on as far as criticizing the project goes. But, you know... knee-jerk reaction to dismiss Alan Moore aside. Watchmen is not... giving Watchmen prequels... Franchising Watchmen is at its heart completely contrary to the point of Watchmen.
Yeah.
Watchmen has been kept in print for as long as it is, and is as special and notable as it is, because of the fact that it is not an ordinary superhero story. It is the deconstruction of the superhero genre. A reader coming into Watchmen cold will probably not appreciate it as much as a comic book reader will, because they will have no understanding of what it is Watchmen is actually doing with the tropes of the genre. And that is to say that it is something apart from ordinary superhero comic books. But to do this is to defy that. There's always the claim, like, you know, prequels won't ruin it. It's like, the Michael Bay movies didn't ruin Transformers. You can still go back and you can still watch your G1 cartoons. The new Star Trek film didn't destroy the original Star Trek. I believe you still have all your DVDs back there. The prequels did not affect the Star Wars films, whatever, you know, these things all still exist in a vacuum. But with Watchmen, it is actually retroactively making something of a statement about the original work, which is to lessen implicitly its uniqueness, if that makes any sense. So I would not. This is one of those rare times when I think we can all safely say, not that I would want to speak for you guys or anything, but I think we can safely say where the people who are up in arms about it actually have a point.
Well, yeah. Okay. To devil's advocate, and not to, I don't know how much this is going to blow that out of the water, but I'm not really trying to, but keep in mind that the original characters that were supposed to be used for this were the Charleston characters, which were pre-existing characters.
That's true.
If he would have used those original Charleston characters, it wouldn't have, the story, he would still have told the same story that he was planning on. He just would have done it with those characters. And they had pre-existing histories and stories. The only reason you can make that argument is because he couldn't use the Charleston characters and had to create similes of those characters to do the story.
Well, that's true. But in the end, he did what he did, and not that.
But that doesn't... Right, and that's why I'm saying, though, if he would have done the exact same story with the question and with Blue Beetle and everything like he was originally planning to do, there wouldn't be an argument against this set. And it's a little bit of devil's advocate, because I see what you're saying in the sense that...
If he had done that... Well, you know, as far as that goes, it is a little pointless to try and talk about what-ifs, because the landscape of comics could well be very different if those had been classic characters. You know, that Watchman might have been disparaged like an identity crisis for destroying classic characters like that. We may never have had all of the things that we have had from those characters.
And Alan Moore would not have given two shits. You know what I mean? Because he would have told the story that he wanted to with the Charleston characters and not given two shits whether or not it ruined those Charleston characters for anybody.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that the landscape of comics would be in a different place if Watchmen had been different to what it was, and I don't think we can really go into hypotheticals. Just suffice it to say, Watchmen is considered something apart, and this diminishes its apartness by treating it like it is actually something that can be franchised, when by the original definition and nature of the work, it shouldn't be.
I was a little angry a little bit about them doing this, but then I think I would have been far more angrier if it would have been like, oh, we're gonna do like I said, you know, Watchmen 2, Watch Harder. Yeah, I don't want to see
J.T. Kroll would write it.
Why I say the only thing that makes me even remotely interested in this is because they are going the prequel route.
Yeah,
so it doesn't
live with a little bit more, because I can choose to ignore this, or I can choose to read it, and it may be good, because like we said, that creative cast, Darwin Cook on Minutemen, oh my god, that could be awesome right there.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was gonna say. Well, if people are so upset about this, you don't have to purchase it, you don't have to read it,
right? And it's not good.
Yeah, I know, but it does.
I love the Dark Knight Returns, but I like to pretend the Strikes Back never happened. I can do that. I can divorce that from it, you know. And that was even from the same creator, but I can divorce it. Same way with this. If this comes out and this is garbage, then I can just divorce it. And it won't be garbage. As long as the Ozymandias part is like that Saturday morning cartoon clip I saw, it won't be garbage.
Well, and keep in mind, too, I mean, DC is not in the business of putting out high art. DC is in the business of putting out, you know, material that people will buy. And
I'm not going to begrudge DC the fact that they've done this in a struggling industry, because this is going to sell like hot cakes, the proverbial heated cakes. And in an industry that could use as much of an infusion of money as it could right now, it's not a, you know, I'm not going to begrudge them it. But it's, when Nicole says there, you know, you don't like it, you don't have to read it. That's true, but it does actually expand beyond you simply reading it, because outside of whatever story it tells, its mere existence does make a statement that diminishes the nature of Watchmen. So, you know, I cannot get angry with anybody who's annoyed about this. I legitimately can. I'm somewhere deep inside me, there is a black kernel that is as annoyed as they are, you know. But Darwin Cook and Amanda Connor.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Did you say some people were having beef with Amanda Connor? What the hell?
I don't know. I didn't see it anywhere, but it was a Brian Cronin made a blog post over at CBR, Comics Should Be Good, saying that he'd seen people having complaining about Amanda Connor being on it. And I was like, he was just saying, what is wrong with your people? And all I can do is echo him. He's like, no, there's a guy at our store who doesn't like Amanda Connor very much. Well, what is wrong?
Dude, Amanda Connor can draw any comic I collect, and I will be happy.
she's the
person off of the book I'm getting, and just put her on it, and I'd be happy.
Did you ever hear of a more perfect choice to go with the Silk Spec? Oh,
I know. Yeah. I mean, you know, look at the difference between just that art on that cover and, you know, what's going with Silk Spectre on that versus the cover on Dr. Manhattan, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, she's going to do this right, you know. So,
oh, but even Adam Hughes will deliver some beautiful work on Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we don't have to worry about Straczynski walking off because he's never left a comic in less than 4 issues before.
Surely he'll finish all 4 of those. And surely. In a timely manner. God, can you imagine anything? Have JMS and Jim Lee ever teamed up? Because that would be the ultimate comic to never happen.
It would be like the cover would come out, and it would have their names on it, but nothing else would come out. It would
be the ultimate in vaporware for comics.
Well, that's where DC is this week. That was their big news for this week. Now, Marvel was like, oh, DC have announced something big. What do we got? I have this, you know, it's like, well, we have that Spider-Man thing that's happening this summer. Well, I don't have
you
any
know
art
what they should have done, though? Well, I was, like, thinking, man, they should have done, like, before Squadron Supreme. That would have been so funny.
Well, they announced, it's a large teaser it says Spider-Man on it. And bilaterally split down the middle is Peter Parker's Ultimate Spider-Man symbol and Miles Morales' Ultimate Spider-Man symbol.
Mm.
What's happening? Are they bringing Peter back to life? I don't think so.
I hope not.
I think it's going to be time travel. Like, you know, Miles travels back in time and he teams up with Peter Parker.
That's that'd be cool. I'm down with that.
I'm down with that. Yeah. I don't know why I don't care that much. I love Miles, but I'm not.
I just don't want him to get rid of Miles. Like, when I saw that, is this what they're going to do? Is this how they're going to bring Peter back?
And
it's
the beginning of the end.
Please don't.
You know?
I was like, please don't.
I just remembered another Marvel announcement this week, which was that we got a little bit of a look at the new Spider-Man costume that Spidey will be wearing during the Ends of the Earth.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
It's a little bit armory. There's really no news here, but the nature of the ad is to... Maybe not even the nature of the ad. I think it's just people who haven't been reading Spidey or something going, oh, not another new costume. Oh, they'll never replace the classic suit. And it's like,
oh, geez.
How many different costumes has Spidey had? He's like a diva in the superhero world. Well, he's had more costumes than anyone.
he has worn about 4 in the last year. Well, I mean, he had his invisible suit. He had his armor suit for dealing with massacre. And then he'll have this one.
Yeah.
So unless you count his FF suit.
Yeah, his FF suit, yeah.
That's good.
I like it.
So he's made himself 3 suits.
It's a little Red Hood-ish, but I like it.
Yeah, there's definitely some sort of Red Hood thing going on there. But I'm just interested because I know that people, some of the announcements are saying, is it new spider armor? And I'm like, no, he made some new spider armor not very long ago. I know this must be something else.
See, and
so I'm looking forward to seeing what it is.
That's like the whole thing. Like, if you're not reading Spider-Man, this typifies it because that's what we said. It's like, Peter now has access to technology and resources. That's the only thing he's never had before. Ooh. And he has the know-how, and if that would have been the case, then he would have had tech suits like this all throughout his career. He just has the resources to do it now.
It's just another example of how Slott is emphasizing Peter's brains.
Yeah, which is great. Speaking of which,
people making wry commentary about how it's the newest design for a video game alternate costume or an action figure or whatever.
That might happen.
All coming from Slot's mind. That's not. I mean, that's because they might get changed later on. But
yeah.
No, there's a lot of fuckwittery going on in the people commenting on that. It's barely news.
Okay, I'm so stealing that. That's awesome. But anyway.
Yeah, that's about it for the news.
So we'll go ahead and mention, because oddly enough, we're not reviewing it, but Amazing Spider-Man did come out this week, and it was
it was very
really good. It was
but we always say that it's very good. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's no...
We were gonna say that anyway.
I said last time that the last issue was the best issue of Doctor Who starring Spider-Man. this was probably the best issue of Doctor Who starring Peter Parker, I think, is the way I'll describe it. So,
indeed, because this is another example of that that thing we've talked about so many times before, where Slott always reminds you it's the man, not the spider.
Yep.
Yep.
Which is great. Great.
Yeah.
I even picked it up.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. Oddly enough, we all read it and we're not reviewing it because we've got other stuff we want to talk about. There's so many
room.
Other.
It's all new stuff this
year.
Yeah.
There's other great
we
things
talk some
to talk
new
about.
Stuff, cause we always talk about the same stuff. But yeah, Spidey, as always, is good. And this last few issues, I think we talked about it last time. Great jumping on point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As far deep into this storyline, you know, the whole new big time, because we're like pretty far into big time, still issues where you can like just pick it up and get into it.
And the resolution to last issue's cliffhanger, the one page resolution, is just comedic poetry in motion.
Brilliant.
Yep. I laughed out loud.
The only thing I'll mention real quick is the Defenders continues to be good. I have no idea what's going on, but I know that it's really funny and entertaining. So that's basically my commentary on it.
They made a book with the Red She-Hulk that was interesting. How did that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I read it and it's like, this story makes no sense at all, but it's really funny and I love the little lines at the bottom of the page.
Oh, yeah.
So so there you go. Matt Fraction. At least funny. So anyway, all right. Well, let's get into it then because, you know, Super Bowl. So, Chris Triplett, go.
Yes. Well, I'm going to try something different this week and talk about Winter Soldier number one. Ooh. Ooh, it's a brand new book. Sorta. I mean, Winter Soldier's been around. You know, he was in Captain America. So, you know, he's been around for how many years now? 3 years? 4 years?
Jeez. No, God, it must be right after this. It must be closer to six. Maybe nearly seven.
Because he's been around since like the last Cap book restarted before Civil War. Because he was like,
that started up after Avengers Disassembled. So yeah, that's a good long time ago.
Yeah, so he's been around for a while, and you know now he's back, and he you know gets his own book where he's not Captain America, and I guess that makes people happy because there was a lot of
makes me happy.
Didn't like him as Captain America. And
no, I didn't. Well,
and then, I'm saying there's some people that didn't like him as Captain America. You know, me. You know.
Not me. I didn't mind him as Captain America. I minded when they killed him offhandedly during Fear.
I was getting to that, yeah. And then, like, there were some people that was a man when he just, like, got bludgeoned to death by a hammer, you know, Fear itself.
By his own arm.
Yeah. And, you know, now he's, you know, he didn't die. He's back. And
hooray!
Yay! And it's a pretty good book. I like it. It's Ed Brubaker's writing it, and is it Butch Goose?
Goose, I think. Butch Goose. Goose?
Yeah.
And, Goose sounded cool though.
I've never had to pronounce that out loud. I've always seen that name before, but I've never had to pronounce it out.
I guess it'd be Goose, like juice. I don't know.
But it's well, like
let's just preface this issue, first of all. A big part of my issue with his whole death thing in Fear Itself was that the last arc of Captain America before Fear Itself happened, before the book ended, the last arc when the book ended and then the new Captain America series started to tie in with the film, with no mention of Bucky or anything that had happened before in it, ended with Bucky discovering that Soviet super soldiers had been placed like as sleeper agents in stasis in America under his watch back during the Cold War under his watch, and that this was finally he no longer would need to wear the mantle of Captain America in some vague attempt at atoning for his own past actions by taking on someone else's identity and fighting enemies that weren't his. This was finally his own mess that he could clean up in his own way to a real personal atonement that would allow him to finally lay all his demons to rest. And then he died. So I was understandably, substantially irate when that occurred. I have told the story of how I cheered and walked around the comic shop with the comic in my hands above my head when it turned out he wasn't dead. And this is where Winter Soldier picks up with that plot thread.
Well, that makes sense then, because like I hadn't read those issues of Captain America, but yeah, it just like it basically starts running, because like at the beginning, like him and Black Widow are investigating something. Looks like they're in Vegas at a casino, and there's basically this thing that's underneath the casino where they're keeping these tubes that contain something. And see, like that's exactly what she was talking about, like, you know, these sleeper cell. Agents or something. It looks like he's, I guess, maybe tracking them down or something. Maybe I should have been reading that, because a lot of this just kind of out of nowhere. And it's very...
I should probably say for the listeners, I didn't actually read Winter Soldier here, because I have consistently... It's the only book I do it with, but I have always got Captain America in the hardback format, because I came into it late, and when I start with hardbacks, I always like to keep going forward with them, look nice on the shelf. So Winter Soldier is one I'm going to wait on the hardback for. But I know I'm not a proponent of waiting for the trade normally, but it is the one book I do it with, so don't judge me. I'm not a hypocrite that but not
I think
that
this would probably
seriously.
Be better. I think it'd probably be better in a trade.
You
because...
just gave me more reasons to judge you, Chris. Jeez.
there are so many already.
But I think this would be better in a trade, honestly. I mean, it's fine as a single issue. I mean, it's interesting. And the end of the issue, you know, gets me, you know, kind of, you know, interested to see the next one. And I don't know. I might keep getting it. I honestly didn't pick this up because I wanted to start getting Winter Soldier. It's mostly because, like, hey, it was coming out. We were talking about it on the show. You was talking about the issue for itself where, you know, he didn't die and he's doing all this stuff. And a whole bunch of people don't know that he's still alive. You know, only like a few people know, like Black Widow and Steve Rogers, right? And then like some Nick Fury maybe. And
yeah, that's about it. That's
Shield guys.
I think it's
yeah.
Those three guys maybe is the height of it.
Yeah, and there's even like in this issue some guys that he like, he's fighting with and says, "Hey, you're dead," you know. And he's like, "Nah, yeah, that's what everybody thinks," or something. He makes a comment. He makes a comment about it or something, you know. But it's basically just a big kind of actiony, you know, weird X-Files-y type mission, something going on. You know, like what you said, you know, sleeper cell guys. Guys, there's like a guy in it who he's like a Russian soldier that lived his whole life in America. Had a family, you know, married and everything, and then one day he gets a phone call, and he just murders his family he's lived with for like, I don't know, 20 years or something, 30 years or something, and then he goes, you know, to kill somebody just because he gets a phone call. And I assume he's like one of those guys that, you know, he's been looking for. And like I said, it's just kind of action. I really don't know what to say about it, because there's not much going on other than, you know, he's just, you know, kind of tracking down leads with Black Widow. It turns out that one of the bad guys that's involved with it, which was really awesome, because there's a scene at the end of it where they're sneaking into this place and they start getting shot up by somebody. They get caught while they're sneaking in, and then you turn the page and you see what's shooting at them, and it's a gorilla with a machine gun screaming in Russian, "Death to America."
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. No, we're cooking.
And, like, you know, Bucky or Winter Soldier's, like, thinking, oh, God, you know, what's going on here? And then you turn the page, and you should have seen two and two and put it together. Gorilla, machine gun, Russian, screaming, "Dead to America," there's a red ghost.
Yeah, baby.
So that's going to get you excited. I'm sure you can't wait to read it just because of that. And then, like, I'm not going to totally spoil the ending, but one of the subjects that these sleeper cells are targeted to kill, it's big. It's you're talking big character in the Marvel universe, and it kind of leads you to think that the assassin has got him. He's got him like in his sights. He pulls the trigger. He shoots. To be continued. So I'm really interested. I would like to see what happens next. Especially, you know, like I said, the art's really good. I mean, the art is top notch. It's got It's still got that kind of style that, let's see, who was doing the Captain America book back when it relaunched and Brubaker was doing it? Help me out here.
When it relaunched or not?
Yeah. Back when, like, you know, the first issue where Winter Soldier showed up and he shoots.
Steve Epting.
It's got that kind of look to it.
Oh, yeah. Captain America has tried to maintain a consistent artistic appearance. Butch Guice has done a lot. I think it's basically just been Epting and Guice from the get-go. I've pretty much done nearly all of it. So they're keeping that style with it.
Mm. They're keeping that style with it, and it works really well, and it's a good issue. I'll strongly consider. I think I'll probably get the second issue if I still like it. I don't know. Maybe I need to drop some books. You know, I'm strongly considering it.
I suppose if anybody is looking for the backstory on this, the trade, I think it's probably out in paperback by this stage. It's Captain America: No Escape is the story of Bucky and the finding out about this part of himself, that finding out about these sleeper agents and what have you. So if you want to fill in the backstory before going into Winter Soldier, that's where you go.
Yeah. But it's good. I'd recommend it at least for the first issue, and then we'll see like what's going on with the second issue. I don't know. Do you think a book like this will sell? I mean, do you think that's something that's going to appeal?
The existence of a Winter Soldier book is like the Scarlet Spider when we talked about it there a couple of weeks ago. It is very much brought about by Marvel's new dictate to cut back on extraneous D-level things and strengthen the core brands. You know, because, you know, we've got Captain America. We've got Captain America team up, you know, Captain America and whatever, you know, and that series. And we've got Winter Soldier as well, so it's basically three Captain America books. It is about strengthening the brand. So that's why it exists. But it is not, you know, it's like, even if that dictate hadn't come down, this feels like this would have happened anyway. Because this is just Brubaker carrying on the story he's been telling with Bucky since, you know, for the last 7 years, really. You know, it is a very long form story, but it's not like a Hickman or a Morrison long form story where there's some Gordian knot of a plot that finally untangles itself the further you move on. It is just the continuing story of Bucky. You know, there was a certain poetry to the fact that the Captain America series did end and was then relaunched with Steve whenever Bucky's tenure as Cap came to an end, because really, Brubaker's Cap has always been about Bucky from the very start, because it started with the Winter Soldier with Bucky coming back. There was a fittingness in that. It would have happened anyway, you know. So whether or not it was, I mean, Brubaker's Captain America has always done well enough that I would like to think the readers will follow the story over into Winter Soldier. I mean, I could see, you know, notionally, anybody who's been reading Brubaker's Captain America for a long time be more likely to follow the story over into this than to pick up the other Captain America book. But recognizability of the name on the cover, we'll just have to wait and see, really, won't we? I mean, I could really see Captain America, a second Captain America movie, doing the Winter Soldier plot. So
I totally was talking about that while seeing the movie. Like when Bucky, you know, falls off that train, I was like, see ya when you come back as Winter Soldier in the sequel.
Yes, that's exactly what I mean, said. Like,
you see him being experimented. Well, you don't see it, but you see him being taken off the experimentation table that Zola had him on, and that's never expanded on at all. And I presume that's building to bring them to the Winter Soldier.
This may be like forward thinking, letting them go through with the comic, because that may be their planning. That maybe that's what where they're going with it. Hey, Cap 2 and Winter Soldier's in it, so let's have a comic out while that movie's out. You know, but yeah, it's good. I'd recommend picking it up.
Awesome, good deal. Nicole.
All right. Well, first of all, I've got to give a shout out to my comic book shop, because now they are officially the most awesome comic book shop ever. Why? Because the bag that they put my comic books in featured Rainbow Dash. Yay! Okay. Oh, wow.
I mean, that's a sign of a quality shop right there.
Oh my gosh, I was so happy when I saw that.
Are there My Little Pony comics, by the way? I don't even know.
If you don't think I would review them.
As popular as that show is, I would think that would be something that
they need to. They need to get it. They need to get. I swear, as soon as that first edition comes out, you know I'll be reviewing it.
It's like I would. It's the sort of thing you would expect Boom Studios to do, because they've got an Adventure Time comic coming out next week. But given that it's Hasbro property, you can only imagine it'd be IDW would do it. So it'd be this horrible, bleak version of My Little Pony.
Oh yeah.
Diana.
You like the apocalypse ponies? With the...
Yeah.
Ponies are awesome.
And Celestia would get headshot, and all the ponies would have a contest to find out who would be the new princess.
Nice.
And then it would be, the original pony that IDW created that nobody had ever heard of, and he would get his own mini series.
Oh! That original pony is going to be called Swift.
Brilliant. Tweet that.
That one's free, IDW. You can have that.
Oh, yes.
HMRC Forever in the chat has just said it would star Dr. Hooves as well, that little pony with the hourglass cutie mark. I'm sure we could work a crossover in there with their Doctor Who property somehow.
Yeah, once we get to the Infestation 3 with vampires, then we'll...
Oh, man, I think the Infestation 3 would just be ponies infesting every universe.
Ponies? There we go.
Oh, that would be awesome. Pony infestation.
Whatever meme is popular now is what they'll do for Infestation 3. Not what's popular at the time, but popular later.
Yeah, zombies, Cthulhu, ponies.
Ponies, there you go. There you go. Who doesn't love ponies?
Internet memes.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry, Nicole. You had read a different comic.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'm not talking ponies this week, unfortunately. But I am talking about something else that is a new number one out. It's Magic the Gathering, based on the card game. Now, myself, I've only played it a couple times, so I'm not very familiar with it. But so this is going to be a very biased review here, since I know very little about the card game. But one thing that's really interesting is they do give a card out, a playing card with the comic that actually matches the cover. I know I'm showing it to you guys, so this is why you guys need a video. So the card matches the cover, and you actually could use this in the playing. So there you go. I know a lot of people spend fortunes on these cards, and who knows, this might actually do some good.
I played Yu-Gi-Oh, but I never played Magic, so...
So I don't know if
it crossed my mind that they would include a card with the comic, but that's pretty clever. It works for Yu-Gi-Oh! Like in all the other card game mangas that Pokemon usually slip a card in with the manga. So,
they're going to do this, routinely with every issue, but that would be awesome. Like I said, I know a lot of people that spend fortunes on these cards. So, this is actually the new number one. It's written by Matt Forbeck and art by Martin Coloco. I think that's how you say it.
What company is it?
It's ID.
You said ID. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, it's like, they put in that comics of Magic the Gathering? Oh, let's get a license for that.
You know, I am the IDW fangirl on here, so, like, I love the Turtles, I love my Ghostbusters, of course Transformers, you know? So here we go. The reason why I picked this up is because I needed something else to read, and I like my fantasy in comic book form. I don't like the big novels, but I like it in comic book form. So actually it starts off basically with this man, you don't know who he is yet, being terrorized, run down by a big demon and his henchmen. You're like, okay, this looks great. The artwork is really good on the very first page. Bright red colors and earth tones saying, oh my gosh, what the hell did this guy do? So basically it starts off like a big, huge action adventure. He's just running through the crowds. He's causing a commotion. He's accidentally getting people killed because he's getting run down. So, and then he finally gets cornered, and then he has to use basically what everyone knows in magic is your casting spells. So he casts a spell. He's transported, not into a place where he wants to be, though. So he's transported into a town where he used to live, and again, he wasn't very well liked there. So
I take it this is like a fantasy sort of generic questing medieval land type setting. Yeah.
So you got a lot of fantasy names and events going on here. Very fantasy creatures, medieval armor going on, a lot of weaponry, and then of course now he's in this town where he's causing a ruckus again, and he has to run again, where he runs into his old love. Oh no. So So that doesn't end as well as he wants it to. But and then finally he gets to a place where he can relax, where, you know, he finds the old lady that's always in his safe haven. And so he gets some advice from her, gets patched up, basically. And then he goes back to his old home where he finds a relic. Now, this is probably one of the coolest things I've ever seen as a relic. But he actually is able to conjure the powers out of it and read what's going on through what happened with this weapon. And he finds out that someone that he really loved and adored was killed by this. And so that's what starts off the whole comic, is he's going to find out who owned this weapon, and he's going to get revenge on the massacre that is caused by this person wielding this weapon. So overall, that's basically the story. It's a good start for a series because it's, like I said, all go, all action. Just go, 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 go. It's like you're watching it on the big screen, just the big chase scene.
What was the writer's name again?
It is Matt Forbeck. Not familiar with him.
No, I don't know him either, but I'm just curious to see if maybe he was if he has previous connections with magic. Yeah. So I'm just looking him up here. Keep talking.
Like I said, I don't know a whole lot about Magic: The Gathering, but this story was fun. It was very, like I said, on the go. Every page had my interest. There was a couple of coloring things. Overall, it was great, but there's just a couple of coloring issues I had with. He has a blood-stained hand, and it looks a little too unrealistic, I guess, a little too red, a little too Crayola. But besides that, I mean, if you like fantasy stories, this is definitely something that you want to look into. They have some great characters, great, like I said, you see all these different weapons, and he does cast some spells. I'm pretty sure if you're familiar with Magic and the card game, you'd be more into this than I am. But
you think there are like a load of nerdy in references to Magic cards and things?
Well, yeah, I know.
There's the Planeswalker. He's a Planeswalker. So if you've ever played, you know what that is. So,
I know there's something with Magic as far as like the setting. There's different things based on, you know, whether you're on land or water or swamp or whatever. There's like, I only know that one aspect, but I know there's supposed to be something with that, so I don't know how much that's playing in, but...
Yeah, I actually enjoyed it for a number one. Yeah, it got my interest going, so... especially if you're a Magic: The Gathering fan, I'm pretty sure you guys would enjoy this.
I am not a Magic: The Gathering fan, and I know nothing about it, so I guess the comic is not for me.
Yeah, I play real games like D&D and stuff,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, I play D&D, so... That's the thing, as I didn't have my D&D comics to read, so I'm like, I might as well pick up something else, a little geeky.
I don't need cards. I've got my imagination.
Yeah.
Imagination with little figurines.
I don't even use figurines. I got my
pen. It's all up here, man. It's like them games of head chess. That's right. Smart people. But it's all D&D. It's all up here.
That's right. I just got my paper and my pencil. And I'm just like,
oh,
and
you use
dice.
Paper and pencil? Oh, such a noob.
Oh, I've got to take notes. You know, hey, my old GM, man, he was worst about giving codes and stuff out, and then like have to, and he'd like only say them once, and they'd be like 10-digit codes. I hated that guy. Anyway. Yeah.
I have no idea why you would need codes for that. That sounds so crazy.
Oh, dude. his was always puzzles and stuff. But anyway, sorry.
The artist, Martin Kuloko, I think that's how you say it, he knows how to draw his demons really well. There's some good demon drawing in here. So if you're into that, pick it up.
Sweet. So, all right. Very good. Awesome.
But it does seem to have an accessibility beyond just for Magic fans, yeah?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, like I said, I've only played it a couple times. Like I said, there's a really good fantasy story coming about that has to do all with this certain blade. And it looks like it's going to be, yeah, a really good adventure.
So there's stuff there for you if you're just a fantasy fan.
So like fantasy fans could probably get into it even though you don't know nothing about magic.
Yeah, he's definitely like a black knight. He's out for revenge for his own good. So. Ah. There you go. Good.
Cool. All right. So, let's see. I am, of course, I've talked about how much I've enjoyed Ghost Rider. and and sad at its soon demise. But I get a little bit of a reprieve and in between the next issue, which is the Venom Circle of Four story. So this is actually Venom 13, but this is starting the Circle of Four storyline.
Which is running weekly this month.
Yes, and that's the deal.
There's 5 Wednesdays this month, so this is Marvel's 5 weeks.
It's 13, 13.1, 13.2, 13.3, 13.4, and then ends with issue 14.
What the hell?
Yes.
And they raised the price on it, too, didn't they? And they like, did. Like $4?
Yeah, it's $4.
There's more pages in it, though, I think, aren't there?
I think so. Yeah, it seems larger. So
there's any question that this would sell better than a miniseries. It feels like a miniseries, because, I mean, I checked the first issue of this, and, you know, it's not really a Venom issue.
No.
It is no more Venom's comic than it is Ghost Riders or Hulk's or X-23's. It's split up very evenly between everybody. It doesn't feel like a bunch of guest stars dropping into some other character's comic.
No.
So I suspect this might have been a miniseries, but it is written and drawn by the usual Venom team, so I don't know. It would have sold better in this format than as a miniseries, I think, anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, honestly, you know, I've been keeping up with Ghost Rider, and I felt pretty well connected to what's going on. I have no idea what's been going on with Venom or with X-23. So
yeah, this is officially my last issue of Venom because I have dropped the book now.
Oh, no, no. Oh. You need to read this series.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, no. You need to read this.
It can't pull me back
you
in.
You need to read all 100s in this. Come on. All right. So for people that don't know, up to speed, I guess, and I didn't even know, so there's like a little first page 4-block intro to where all these characters are at. I guess Flash has gone AWOL. Red Hulk is searching for him. X-23 had some of her blood stolen, and she wants it back. And Alejandra's, doing her thing.
I legitimately have no idea where any of those things happen.
No. I don't know if that was like a previous
issue. I don't
issue
know if that's
of
from the last issues of X-23 and Hulk or not.
Or if it was just like, here's a prequel, you know, here's a preview lead-in.
Yeah.
You know. Either way, it was fine, because it was just enough information to give the lead-in, because Flash is, like, drinking and hiding out with the symbiote and trying not to let the symbiote take over. Then there's some emo guy who seems to be doing something nefarious, stealing souls.
He reminded me of Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element.
Yes! I knew there was something that seemed, you know, that was reminding me, but I didn't quite place it, but that would be it. Apparently at some point Johnny Blaze became Marvel's answer to John Constantine. and it happened, I think, a few issues into Ghost Rider, but that's apparently where we're at now. Where, you know, gone is that, like, Johnny just angry at the devil with his shotgun. This is now, you know, knows about the occult and, you know, has, like, actual trinkets and things. But the basic gist of this story is sort of the characters coming together completely by accident, but mostly because this main antagonist has taken something in some way from each of them, really, in some way or the other, well, maybe other than Red Hulk. And he's built this roulette wheel gateway thing. And basically tricks Ghost Rider into powering it, which is awesome.
So is this Ghost Rider not very smart or something?
She's new. She's a little fresh. Okay. Yeah.
She's green.
Yeah, she's a little green. Well,
so,
it's essentially,
so when she becomes Ghost Rider, she doesn't like, I am the spirit of vengeance and, you know, I'm going to destroy. Does she just talk like herself, I guess?
No, it's
like
a little bit of a hybrid. It's kind of almost like a Spawn. Not Spawn, Venom sort of thing, yeah. Where, you know, it's very much, you know, wrestling for control sort of thing. There's a couple of great moments in here, like when the actual Venom symbiote tries to attach to Red Hulk.
Oh.
Which, in like, the dialogue color starts to change as, you know, Red Hulk is, like, running and trying to rip the symbiote off. So, to get it off, he runs into a gas station and blows it up. Which, of course, the symbiote goes running off before that. But I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, it's definitely got, I mean, X-23 symbiote-empowered clones.
Wow.
So there's 4 symbiote clones and X-23 clones.
It's like Maximum Carnage all over again. That's awesome.
Yeah, sort of. But Alejandra accidentally, well, she powers the centrifuge. I don't know. I think she was trying to close it or destroy it or something. But anyway, it ends up powering it, and it opens up a gateway between Hell and Earth. And so Hell starts spilling out into Las Vegas. So Blaze uses a medallion to at least stop its progress. But you have this just landscape of, like, well, it's basically what Vegas would look like if Hell started spilling out all over it. So it's like the strip covered in, like, hellfire and demons and all kinds of, you know, flying eyeballs and things, disembodied heads. But,
wow.
You know, but the best part is one of the best parts of this is the reveal. When you find out that this sort of gothy-looking antagonist who's been, like, pulling all these strings to bring Hell to Earth, it's Blackheart. Yeah, remember him?
Ghost Rider villain? I don't know when Blackheart was last in anything.
I have no idea.
It was like a Marvel versus Capcom game.
Game? I know, right? Sadly, I think more people know him from the game than anything else. I mean, he was in the first Ghost Rider movie. And that's what's kind of weird about this, because I'm like, is this a Venom story? Why is Blackheart here? It's really got, you know, it's really got a strong Ghost Rider feel to it. But nonetheless, it's a Venom story. So,
I do like the art in it. I've always really liked the art in Venom, but the reason I said this is my last issue is not because I've read it and I didn't like. I haven't even read this issue. I haven't even read an issue of Venom in forever. It's just casually. I needed to drop a book to get a book, and I wasn't reading Venom, so I dropped it.
We should read this because it's only 5 issues over the next few weeks.
Yeah, apparently they're all 13 point something from what I heard.
Yeah. So yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. It's kind of, there's a little bit of dynamic, which is interesting. I think in particular between, Flash and, Red Hulk, because there's like this military sort of relationship, that's going on between them. And so it's not just a superhero dynamic, but a military dynamic as well. So that's kind of fun, but I like it. I think it's good. It's all Alejandra, so I'm happy. And I won't reveal the end. What I'll say is that Blackheart uses this mirror that, ends up creating your antithesis. So we have the 4 heroes of the story, which is Venom, Red Hulk, X-23, and Ghost Rider. And this mirror creates an antithesis for each of them.
Antithesis, Jonathan.
Whatever.
Hey, that's Tony Moore that did the art. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is Tony Moore, yeah.
Cool.
And I can say that I don't know that I would have imagined most of these things, but they are quite awesome. I mean, in particular, the Hulk's antithesis is just wow. Anyway, good stuff. Check it out. Yeah, if you want something that you'll be done reading at the end of February, it's a nice little story. And like I said, I think if you have any interest in any of the one characters, I think the whole thing could be interesting to you. Because like I said, I like Ghost Rider, and that part was interesting enough to me to keep me going.
So it's a good lead into the Ghost Rider movies, what you're saying?
Probably, yeah. Awesome. Well, and I don't wonder if that wasn't, you know what I mean? It's like, was this supposed to be a Ghost Rider mini for February because of the Ghost Rider movie? And
maybe.
Because Ghost Rider wasn't doing well?
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. Yeah.
You know, because it wasn't doing well, they said, we'll just put it out as part of Venom. Because it's not really taking up but 2 issues of Venom.
Right, because it's like really weird that it's like 13.1, 0.2. I mean, why wouldn't it just be like Venom 14?
Or it's something that was going to happen across all of the issues. It's something that was going to be, you know, start in Venom and then be in Hulk, and then they decided not to do that either. Because
I mean, there's the notion that because all of, like, two of the four books in Voltaire are getting canceled.
Correct.
But X-23 and Ghost Rider are both skipping this month and having their final issues next month, whereas Hulk's just carrying on as normal. Yeah,
which
it just seems
maybe
like,
that. Well, but maybe that's it then. Maybe that is the answer.
Whatever the case is, it certainly doesn't feel like this was the format we were originally supposed to see this in.
Right. Yeah. It
It might be.
But it really seems like it was meant to be something else originally. Yeah. So, anyway, good stuff. Check it out. Venom, Circle of Four storyline going on all this month.
It's 90s-erific.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I wouldn't say that, but it's pretty cool.
Well, so, hey, this is...
Yeah, it's got Blackheart in it, for God's sake.
It's got Blackheart. Wait a minute. It is. It's Blackheart, Hulk, Wolverine. Yeah, okay, yeah, it is the 90s. Damn it!
It's basically an evil version of the new Fantastic Four.
It is.
X-23, Ghost Rider, Hulk, Evil Spider-Man.
Jesus, I want to see a new Fantastic Four versus these guys now. I want to see
it's that. It's the Frightful Four.
Oh, 90s all over me.
Oh, wow. All right, Chris McFeely, save us. What do you got, sir?
Okay, folks. So I'm going to talk about today. I am going to talk about The 12. What's The 12, you ask me? I've never heard of it, you may cry. Well,
yeah, that's what I said. I'm like, what is that?
I once heard a story told by a boy from another land, told by his father from another world. I don't know if this thing actually exists or not. I think it's just a legend, right?
Well, The 12 began 4 years ago, just before Secret Invasion. With the in-story captions dating it to after Secret Invasion, because the nature of the story meant that Secret Invasion would really mess it up. It came out on a fairly regular schedule for about half of a year, a little more than half a year, 8-9 months, and got 8 issues out on a pretty regular basis. There may have been some slight delays in there, I don't remember specifically off the top of my head. Then it hit issue 8. And it disappeared from this world. It was no more. It had ceased to be. It was an X series. And then, this week, The 12th number 9 appeared.
Wow.
Why? Why? Why, you may ask me? Why the delay? Well, I'll tell you. It's written by J. Michael Straczynski.
Oh.
Of course.
So this does
Wait,
mark
I,
about
I think I've heard of that guy.
I know. He's like a phantom. He sneaks in the night. this is, I think, the only book that means he's actually come back to after just leaving it to go and work for DC or whatever it was. Okay, so The 12, the hook of The 12 is, it is a series about, the 12 is the group, is the titular group. 12 Golden Age heroes, frozen at the end of World War II and unfrozen in the modern day. The trick is, and the thing that really tickled me when I heard about it and convinced me to buy it, creative team notwithstanding, is that these are 12 real Golden Age heroes that Marvel actually published comics about in the 30s and 40s. Now, they may have only ever published one story about them. No, I don't think any of these guys ever headlined a book. But they might have only published one short story about them in an anthology. Some of the characters might have gotten more than one. I don't think any of them maybe got more than 6, if any of them got that many. But they are all real characters. So that little bit of history grabbed right away. Now, it's written by J. Michael Straczynski, as I said. It's drawn by Chris Weston. I'm going to give you a rundown of the whole thing here, basically, rather than talk specifically about this new issue, because it's coming into the middle of a story, not much point. I'll just give... This is The 12. So the story is that these 12 characters were among all of the super people who made the big push into Berlin at the end of World War II. They broke off from the group. They weren't a team or anything. They were just 12 people who happened to be in the same place at the same time who broke off... along with, you know, all the groups going everywhere to root out the Razzies. They found an underground lab where they were captured and imprisoned in cryogenic suspension. And then they were finally uncovered whenever a construction project in the modern day just found the hidden vault. They are taken in by Uncle Sam, put up in a house out in the country where they will be kept for 1 year. So that they can decide what to do with their lives. With the government taking the position that these are heroes from a time whenever Uncle Sam was a friendly figure. The government was something to be trusted and supported and not disbelieved in. And they want to take advantage of that. And that is why they had to specifically date this to after Secret Invasion. Because if it was supposed to be happening alongside Secret Invasion, whenever you couldn't believe anybody was anybody that they claimed to be, you know, bunch of old Golden Age heroes come back out of nowhere. Scrolls!
Yeah, easy.
Yeah. So our 12 are... I just give you basic... okay, well, the hook of the whole thing of this is, right, what distinguishes it is that there is no villain, there is no conspiracy, there is no evil force bearing down on them. This is 100% character-driven drama. These are characters who are shaping their own story. Our lead character is the Phantom Reporter, who is the fedora, domino mask, cloak, pistols type of crime fighter, no superpowers. He is a reporter who... enforced justice by night to the people who he wrote the stories up of who couldn't have it served to them by the law. He is our main character narrating the book for us. We also have Mr. E, who is of the same fedora pistols style, who... okay, here's the thing, right? I think I'm a secret racist.
Okay.
Because it's been 3.5 years since I last read an issue of the 12, and I was running through it in my mind, thinking, I'm never going to be able to just pick up the 9th issue of this. I'm going to have to reread all 8 of these, which I did, because... but I was running through what I could remember, and I could remember 11 of the 12, because 12 is a lot of characters, I could remember 11 of them, and I could remember the plots that 10 of those 11 were embroiled in. The guy I forgot is The Witness, who was a rookie cop who killed an innocent man because he shot first and didn't ask questions, but was granted a second chance at life by a higher power, but is now condemned to witness men die. He will find himself drawn to the sight of a death, and if the man is innocent, he must save them, and if not, he is doomed to watch them die as a reminder. But... when they went into Berlin, he'd just come from Auschwitz, and what he does in this, he hasn't actually had much of a role in the main plot, but we've seen him off doing his witnessing dealy when he sees an old Nazi war criminal get run over by a truck. And the other character whose plot I couldn't remember is Mr. E, who is a fedora, pistols, domino mask type crime fighter, who, it turns out in the course of the story, was a Jew who hid his identity so that he could rise up in the world. And his family have hated him for it for all the time he's been gone.
In all fairness, he hid his identity very well that you forgot him.
I know, but I forgot I forgot the two Jewish plots. I think that makes me a secret anti-Semitic. I didn't even know it. Well, moving on from that, anyway.
Alrighty!
Yeah. This is going to really add some interesting overlay to your reviews from now on, just saying.
We'll be asking you about that from here on out.
McFeely? Oh yeah, I forgot about that because of this.
So the other members of the Twitch are Blue Blade, who is half Errol Flynn, half Terry Thomas, and wants to get involved in this interesting new thing called television, but has a routine trapped in the 30s. He has taken with him into television the robot Electro, who you might have heard of. There have been a lot of robots named Electro, characters named Electro in Marvel. This is a robot that was controlled by a scientist from afar, so it's actually just a lifeless hunk of metal. Or is it? If there's a mystery in the 12, that's it. Mastermind Excello, that's who Amadeus Cho took his code name from. Amadeus Cho rarely used that name in his adventures with Hercules and everything, but that's where the name comes from. He took that name from him. Who has the power to see through time and just to discern destiny. He's a psychic with the ability to discern destiny, so he has prepared for his own future and has things in motion to make sure things turn out the way they do in the modern day, but he's having trouble adjusting because the world is so much louder and busier that he can't discern his destiny properly. We've got Fiery Mask, a former doctor with power over fire, who, when we last left him in issue 8, had his origin being called into question by government authorities. Laughing Mask, a former DA with, again, no powers, but he wears a mask of the face of comedy, and shoots gangsters. That's what he did. He had no powers. He did. He enforced the law that the law couldn't, and did kill gangsters execution style. And he has been around the halfway point of the series. He is arrested for a murder in the 1940s.
From the description of all these characters, it's really interesting that before Watchmen was announced when this came out this week. You know what I mean?
There's a twist there. Rockman is allegedly the king of a subterranean kingdom who was separated from his people and is a real tragic figure who just spans the series, immensely powerful and can do a lot of good, but is so heartbroken for the loss of his kingdom that all he does is sleep in the basement of the house the government has given them and pound on the floor with every waking hour in the hope that his people will hear him and come for him. Dynamic Man, who is the one guy who has, he was a superhero designed to be the man of tomorrow, but now he's found tomorrow and found it wanting. But he is the man who has dived headlong into being a hero again in an attempt to make a change and make this future the future he believes he should be. He's the closest thing the book has to a villain, although he hasn't done anything actually villainous, but he has a real problem with interracial couples and the gays. We have Captain Wonder, who is a college professor who got dosed with a super serum, a wonder serum, if you will, and gained the generic power set of super strength, flight, etc., who has come back. He was the one with a loving family, and to come back and find your wife dead and your sons killed in Vietnam, he has not got over it in a hurry, and that's what he's doing. And the 12th and final member is the Black Widow, not Natasha Romanoff, the modern day Black Widow, but the original Black Widow, Clairvoyant, who serves
wow.
the devil. I know, it was the 30s. She serves the devil. she is an agent of devil, made a pact with the devil to avenge the death of her sister, claims the souls of men who have made deals with the devil and attempted to wriggle out of his reach. And the Phantom Reporter, she and the Phantom Reporter are essentially the main characters because the Phantom Reporter's got the hots for her and is trying to figure out what the story is with her. So that's your basic breakdown of the 12. This issue in particular, it's not, doesn't mean no good to really go into the details, but the first issue of the series ended on a flash forward to the Phantom Reporter, gun in hand, standing over the murdered body of the Blue Blade. And with this issue, we catch up to the future. There is, as I say, little point in me going into the details of this issue, because it's so far on, and I'm really just talking about the series as a whole. But I want to hate the fact this is so late. I want to hate on the book because it's so late. But it's really, really a good series. As I say, there's no great villain or evil conspiracy plot working against our heroes. There is a bit of a mystery at the heart of it with the flash forward building up to seeing how it happened, but it is basically 100% character-driven drama where these people are trying to adjust to the present day, and there's so much that they're hiding from one another and so much that they're suffering with. Just these little things where Mr. E goes to his family home, finds that his wife and son are still alive, but his wife is basically hours away from death and his son hates them for robbing them of their proud heritage. That, what was the other one? My brain's just skipped off on me there for a second. When Captain Wonder's old sidekick, who is now an old man, comes to see him again, and it's all happy reunions until it turns out the only reason he's come back is that he hopes Captain Wonder has made more of the serum because he is a bitter, lonely old man who never had a life outside of sidekicking. It's not a happy book. It's not a happy book, but it is a great character drama. Well, here's how you get it. The first six issues have been collected in a book already. Presumably they did that when the series was still planning to come out on time so they could release two six-issue volumes. That was years ago that Volume 1 came out. With the release of Issue 9 this week, they've collected Issues 7 and 8 into a must-have one-shot, which also came out this week, which you can pick up. Issue 10 is due out later this month, two issues this month, and Issues 11 and 12 will follow monthly. So you can jump on the boat right now. I would fully expect this to get an ultimate collection with all 12 issues in one paperback down the line. But
So will they finish it? That's all I need to know.
I am operating on the assumption that it is all finished and they wouldn't have solicited it otherwise. Because the interesting thing is that issue 9 here is 22 pages long for $2.99.
It sounds really good, but I don't want to pick up what's out now until it's all out. And then when it's out, I would probably get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I don't want to start, read like issue 1 through 9 and then like, oh, well, you know, 12's not coming out for 2 years. Maybe I can wait 2 years until they collect the whole thing. You know?
I am pretty sure the whole thing is probably done at this stage. Simply because I don't, after such a delay, I don't think they would have solicited the issues if it wasn't finished. The original inker was Gary Leach. He left at the midpoint, and Chris Weston has just been inking the whole thing himself. The fact that this is 22 pages indicates this was done some time ago before 20 was the new minimum, was the new maximum, which has been like half a year now. That's been established for, and it's just really very good. You know, the fact that there was also a zero issue that contained some of the original appearances of some of these characters, and there was a one-shot produced somewhere in the middle of the 3.5 years there, written and drawn by the author, just to have something out there. I think that one-shot might be collected in the must-have as well. It was called Spearhead. But just a great book with a cast of great characters who are very, very well developed because it is all about them. I have only given you an example of the tragedies that... I mean, it's 12 characters, 12 issues. So although they don't break it up in the way that like each issue is about one character, because the whole cast, it's a real ensemble cast. They do all star in each issue, but each issue is usually given over to at least giving you a proper origin of one of the characters. And of course, there's quite a few retcons at work here, because some of the really hokey origin-style stories for these 1930s and 40s characters need a little tweaking to update them, you know. Rockman, in particular, has a great twist later on in the series, a really, really tragic one as well, as if he wasn't tragic enough. And I just really, really recommend it. I want to be down on it because of how long it took to come out. But this is not Superman and Wonder Woman Straczynski. This is Thor Straczynski. This is good Straczynski. And don't let his name...
Good Straczynski is awesome. Bad Straczynski is really bad.
So, I mean, is this going to come out next month, or is it just going to be random publishing, or do you know?
Well, issue 10 is due later this month. There's two issues this month.
Okay.
And issues 11 and 12 have been solicited for next month and the month after.
Okay.
So, cool.
Yeah. Please talk about the last issue when it comes out so that I know that it's all out. So that I can go.
Yeah. Mention that and then I can.
When that happens, yeah.
This sounds like one that is definitely meant for trade.
I sat down there on Tuesday morning before getting issue 9 and just reread all 8 of them. That's the thing about it, it is massively dense. It features like full first-person narration from the Phantom Reporter as your POV character. This is not a book that will be... You know, if this was in a trade, this would be like a novel. This is a long... This is a dense book. This is very much a book where each issue is given over to covering one particular piece of ground. It is not something... It's not decompressed. It's not that they don't flow into one another, obviously, because the story is carrying on through. But as I say, because there is no one direct plot leading the way through it, is 12 separate stories of 12 people alone in the world who are dealing with their own personal tragedies and the giant upheaval that has just struck their lives. Each issue is about something in particular. And it'll read fine in a trade, no problem, but it's definitely one that is written with issues, individual issues in mind. And, you know, if you're feeling brave, go out, get the trade, get the must-have, get issue 9, and pick up the last 3 over the next 2 months. Because this is the sort of book that I fear we won't be seeing much from Marvel in the foreseeable future with the new policies and what gets published and what doesn't. And I'm pretty sure that they're really only bringing these issues out to bring it to a conclusion.
Yeah.
After so long. Yeah. And it's definitely the sort of book I want to support. And I'm really, really thankful that it rewarded me by being so very good. Check it out, definitely. The 12.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. So that brings us to the end of the show, where we're going to talk about Action Comics, because Chris McFeely assures us that this was really good, and I think it was good, but I don't know why.
Bold out.
So,
and I forgot to take mine out.
Because I got lost about halfway through and have tried, and I still am kind of a little odd at what's going on.
Yeah, like, I read the last issue, and I read the issue before that in Action Comics, but even though I went back and looked at those issues, I still feel like there's issues I've missed.
There's something I missed, I think.
Well, as I'm reading...
There's a whole series of books I've missed.
I'm reading Morrison's Batman in trade right now. I'm not reading anything else in between it. I just read Time and the Batman this morning. So that just leaves me Return of Bruce Wayne and the final volume of Batman and Robin. So my head is, at the moment, very attuned to the ways of Morrison. I reread all of Final Crisis last week.
So you're going to be the Morrison whisperer for us this week and explain what this all means.
What's that? What's that? It's a load of shite, really. I just made it all up as I went along.
Got really high and... Okay. Yeah. So
this is called When Superman Learned to Fly. It is the second part of a two-part story, written by Morrison, of course, art by Andy Kubert. It is a digression from the plot that is currently going on in Action Comics, in which Superman is fighting the Terminauts, which have been sent by... Well, this is what this issue first starts to imply to us. We were saying Brainiac because it was... a big green thing that had come in a big metal spaceship with tentacles to shrink parts of the world and preserve their knowledge. Sounds like Brainiac to me, doesn't it? Oh,
yep.
But...
oh yeah.
So this is a digression in which the adult Legion of Superheroes, who just appeared on the last page of the previous issue, bring the adult Superman back in time to just around the time when that is going on. They're up on... Up on the satellite. This seems to be set shortly after the end of the Terminaut storyline. What we seem to be able to take away from this is that following that storyline, the young Superman will take his rocket up to the Collector's satellite, which will be abandoned, where it will, through its Kryptonian crystal core, transform the satellite into his Fortress of Solitude, which may be relocated to Earth later, but this will be his first Fortress of Solitude.
We know that he even said something like that was his first.
His first,
yeah.
It was noted in the previous issue, when we got a look at his life on him being sent from Krypton, that the rocket had Brainiac AI on it. The implication being that at some point in the future, the AI in the rocket and the Collector will become one and become the Brainiac that we know. That these are separate beings right now. And that is a threat that is becoming very potential right now, because the anti-Superman army have stolen the Kryptonite power core out of the rocket, which leaves it powerless and free to be overwritten by the Collector AI when it reboots. In the past, before this thing is supposed to happen. The anti-Superman army, consisting of a lot of unidentified characters, the principal members being the Kryptonite Man,
they're identified? A lot of these guys, I didn't know who they were.
Well, the...
I'm looking at them, and my first thought is that, wow, that's a lot of Silverhawks villains in the background. Like the guy with the hat and the gun strapped on his back. I was like, dude, what's going on here?
Well, they mention later in the issue a character. They don't say who he is, but they mention a character called Nimrod the Hunter. I'm assuming that's him.
Yeah, it must be him.
Right. Yeah. We don't know who this big bandaged guy is. He definitely calls to mind like the Unknown Soldier, so I think maybe there's supposed to be some connection to the Unknown Superman from Morrison's All-Star Superman. Maybe, not sure. The Kryptonite Men are like a take on the classic villain, the Kryptonite Man, who was just like the power of green kryptonite, except we have a blue one, a green one, and a red one here. And then we have these, are they called? The other characters who are really just there to provide a something of a red herring, whose names were...
Oh, the sisters.
Yes. The Sisterhood of Abiding Hate.
Yes.
The Sisterhood of Abiding Hate.
And then
in their shroudship is what it says?
What was
the shroudship is what they're inside, you know.
Which remind me of the Doctor Who characters, the meme, whatever
whatever they were called. They're definitely...
Did they include traveling pants?
Yeah. where it roves. There's also this little girl tucked away in the corner who appears to be a character from the Golden Age who was Lois Lane's niece at one stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The relevance of that being that all of these characters have been gathered together by the little man. The little man from the first issue of Action Comics who was working with Glenn Morgan. No, that's what he's actually called, the little man. That's what they called him in the director's commentary for the first issue.
Yeah.
The little man. And he has gathered these characters together. It is mysterious. And he's also got, like, this girl who's working for him, she is from the planet Trom, and I believe that was the homeworld of, some Legion of Superheroes member who could change elements, because that's what she does. She changes the lead shielding around the kryptonite engine to glass so he can show it off to them. So the Legion of Superheroes and Superman fight this is a new character. His name is Eric Drecken, somebody Superman already knows, who has self-evolving powers. Probably, again, another Legion of Superheroes type reference. He turns into a big brain squid, a dinosaur, a giant ape.
It looks like a big red dinosaur, by the way. A devil dinosaur. You know?
A devilish dinosaur. A devilish
dinosaur.
He turns into a big monkey later on. I think that's supposed to be a reference to Titano the Super Ape, you know. We get a little flashback to when Clark met the Legion for the first time, just filling in that part of his history. And, you know, it starts to sort of go a little crazy, you know, when, I don't know, they find out that the little man and the anti-Superman army are hiding inside a Tesseract, or, you know, like the TARDIS. It's a big doctor, like the TARDIS, bigger on the inside. Where is this Tesseract? Well, Nimrod the Hunter fired it inside Superman's brain. The villains are actually hiding inside of Superman's brain right now.
Oh my God!
I know. Not even done yet. Then the Legion travel back in time into the pellet before they got there in the present. Disguise themselves as the Kryptonite Men through Saturn Woman's telepathy, and disguise the Kryptonite Men as the Sisterhood of Abiding Heat.
Oh my God!
And when the little man figures out that the Sisterhood are not really who they claim to be, because glass, which his assistant turns the lead casing for the Kryptonite engine into, is supposed to be toxic to them. Oh, the Silver Age! You know, he has her kill them. I mean, that's, I think that's supposed to be like a reference to how lead is toxic to Daxamites, as if lead gives off some kind of radiation the way kryptonite does. Mm-hmm. Like, glass somehow gives off radiation that the Sisterhood could die from. And then he orders the sphere shattered, and Superman's brain is flooded with kryptonite radiation, but he is able to channel it into the spaceship and repower it and reestablish the past as it is supposed to be. That's your
that
quick
was awesome.
Run.
Yeah.
But the thing that fascinates me is that this is a complete validation of what we were saying about the very first issue of Action Comics. The current story arc in Action Comics, the Brainiac stuff, maybe not so much the Brainiac stuff, but the very earliest stuff, that is pure 1930s socialist Superman crusader for the weak against the evils of like big business and the law gone wrong or whatever. And we said that as Action Comics went on, you could bet that Morrison would progressively move things up to introducing the crazy Silver Age space elements. And that's what this is!
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the Kryptonite Man, this Drecken character seems to basically embody every time Superman fought with a giant monkey or dinosaur or amoeba or any of the other crazy giant creatures that he would fight with. Of course, you have the Legion in there, first appeared during the 50s as well, and added that element. You have his Superboy past in Smallville as well. That is what this is. And then the most interesting thing, I'd heard this theory slung around a little. I don't think we ever mentioned it on here, but this issue seems to leave little room for doubt, unless it's a curveball. The little man orders the lead sphere therein to be turned to glass, and Superman's brain flooded with radiation. What he says next is blacked out. It's all just scrawls. But Saturn Woman says, "Where did he go? What did he say?" And it sounded like you just got it. You just
oh no!
Might be Mr. Mix's Pitlick.
Yes.
He said a word and disappeared. He said Kiltipsism and disappeared back to where it came from. And Lois Lane's niece had a story where she was involved with Mr. Mixes Pitlick, where like he gave her powers or something.
That would be so Morrison too, because
you know, because one of the first things he did was to slip Batmite into.
Yes,
into
that's what I was going to say.
His ideas, you know, this is not some weird little digression that was published because Rags Morales couldn't keep up with the art or something. This was always supposed to happen. Now, this is just it's amazing how straightforward the first issues of Action Comics were, and you know, and then with last issue we even had the things that were confusing about them, like the weird little goat alien thing being filled in. And things like that, and finding out where what the deal with the rocket was, and then this one is like this is full Morrison. Like if you've been wondering where Morrison is, he's been hiding, and he's just burst out of Superman's brain here in issue six.
Wow. You know,
this issue is such a tease, because what this is this is what I want the other Superman comic to be. I want to be the origins of like how he becomes Superman, and then I want this to be the other Superman book, because you know he's Superman, he's in the costume, he's confident, he's fighting supervillains. I want this, and I'm not getting this right now.
See, I don't think I could have this be Superman all the time. This is, you know, I mean, I think I'm analyzing it right when I say that this is Morrison's take on the crazy, chintzy, doofy Silver Age 1950s stuff, when everything got a lot more sci-fi. And, you know, as the book goes on again, we may see, you know, even more different eras of Superman brought in as time rolls on. Because this was something he played with in his Batman as well. It didn't really inform the main thrust of the story, but it did have, you know, whole issues where Batman was sent into mad flashbacks where he saw his whole history from the 30s up, even though it's not a contiguous timeline, but as if it was. Where, you know, as we've said before in the show, is that Morrison loves superheroes, you know, with all the other hot British writers that you mentioned in the same name, Warren Ellis, Mark Miller, Garth Ennis, Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore. These people seem to have sort of either outright hate or made their peace with the superheroes, or had any love of it bludgeoned out of them. Alan Moore. Morrison's love for superheroes, and Superman in particular, because basically Superman is Jesus when Morrison writes him, you know. He's the one who still loves them, and he will always respect all these strange, disconnected corners of their continuity in this way, even if they don't make much sense with where the characters are now or what they're doing now. There's always this love for what is on show. And you know what? I'm sure there are a dozen or more things in here that I'm completely not seeing as well.
Yeah.
Which will become apparent later on. You know, this, you know, if you blink, you know, you'll miss something in this. There is so much stuff going on in this issue. It is not what maybe, you know, I mean, I could see being annoyed with this issue. I saw CBR's review for this issue was a disappointed one, because this is not what, you know, they were buying Action Comics for the young Superman stuff, and this is not that. But, you know, well, as I said, we've been saying, start, we expect that as the comic goes on, this is the stuff that will come in, and
when it comes
self-fulfilling prophecy, as far as I'm concerned.
When it comes to Grant Morrison, you just sit down, strap in, hang on, and go for the ride. You know, do not expect, do not anticipate, do not, you know, you can't say, oh, this is supposed to be old. You know what? It's going to be the Superman that Grant Morrison wants you to see, and once it's all said and done, it's probably going to be awesome. So just hang on.
You have to sit in and hang on, but you better make sure your eyes are open and you are looking at everything around you.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at this and like, okay, it said Ha, La, Kal-El. So what's the Ha and La? And then there's another La, and there's a Lock. Okay, so this is, I have no idea what that is, but that's going to mean something, you know.
You know, and I just forgot to mention as well, there's a really nice backup strip in here by Sholi Fish as well about the day Clark left Smallville.
Yeah, I was gonna mention it if you didn't, because that was a good story. I like that.
Like every line of dialogue hints at some other story that we haven't had told to us, you know. So, like, you know, Clark remembers all these things, like crying in his mom's arms. I didn't mean to. Why am I such a freak? You know, you're not a freak. You have a gift of being all the stronger. It means you have to be more careful. And you're immediately thinking, well, what happened? What's the story there? You know, this is good. This is good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And it definitely makes me feel I'm getting my value here as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I gotta pick this one up. Well, I have it on my pull list. I just didn't pick it up.
Yep. I think Action Comics, I think, is the one that is consistently satisfying me.
Because I'm enjoying reading it so far. It's like you said.
This issue has been a.
Hasn't been an issue that's been bad. You know, I mean, there hasn't. And I really don't know if we'll ever see an issue that'll be bad. Honestly, I don't want to front load it and say, oh, we're never gonna get a bad issue, and then jinx it. Oh, don't jinx it, Chris. Yeah.
Even if it's bad, it's only because you think it's bad at the moment. Ultimately,
and it'll make sense later.
It will make sense later.
And then you'll think, and then you'll be like, oh my God, that actually happened.
In reading Morrison's Batman, my brain has just really been opened to the way he works after, I'll admit it, after just not really getting it for a very long time. But I'm a bit late to the party, but I get it now. And I'm really enjoying it as a consequence.
I've got to read that Batman run. So cool. All right. Very good. So there you go. Action Comics. Check that out. You know, you're kind of at the beginning of a Morrison run here. It's only issue 6. And there will probably be a lot more. So
It's going to be interesting to see how they trade this.
Yeah. Very, very.
Because this does feel like it's supposed to happen now, but it is set just after the, you know, it's like if there had been 6 issues and that was the Terminaut story, then this chronologically would have been 7 and 8, like literally right after, maybe even simultaneous with the very end of the story is when it's happening. You would wonder if they'll collect them in order, if they'll jig them around a bit to make it a little more readable in book format.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm excited. I'm liking Superman. What the hell is wrong with me?
I know.
Crazy.
Wait, let me rephrase that. I'm liking this Superman.
Yeah. I already like All-Star, so, you know.
But. Yeah. Right. I wish I liked the modern day Superman book. That's the one that I want to like.
There's a new creative team coming. You never know.
Yeah, it might get better.
I know. I saw the cover for the next one or the ad for it on one of these issues, and I'm like, wait a minute. He's punching that villain from Wildcats. What the hell are they doing? you know what I'm talking about? The guy with the flaming head and the mask looking thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but I know.
Yeah.
So. Awesome. Okay. Well, I do want to mention real quick, next Saturday will be our live broadcast for Toy Fair. Woohoo! Woo! Very excited. We're already getting some early images of things, so I'm very excited about this Bruticus.
Let's play some football win.
The turtle stuff looks good, so good stuff.
Oh, the turtle stuff looks awesome.
Yeah.
I was so happy you guys mentioned that last week. You guys were mentioning it last week. So, I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
So we're going to be broadcasting live right here at tfradio.net/live. So check us out next Saturday morning. Like I said, we usually start around 10 or so, and we go all day long.
Is it XV that's going, or is it Rob?
It's Peter. Peter will be there live.
Oh, Peter.
So we'll get some live updates from Peter. Usually he's blog casting that, so it'll probably be a lot of text updates that we'll relay, but we should get a lot of pictures and things as well.
That'd be awesome.
It's usually a lot of fun. So, of course, this crew is always welcome to pop in and out. Usually that happens.
I'll jump on if I'm welcome.
You are welcome, sir. Chris, you know, like I said,
I'm
any
really
of you
looking would forward to seeing what Hasbro's got for us, because they have been hitting on everything.
I think I should jump in because everyone needs more ponies.
That's right. So, like I said, you know, we'll probably, usually it's kind of a collective TF Radio network deal. It's our Super Bowl for the network, if you will.
Yeah.
So very excited about that. So check that out. And of course, we'll be talking about it more on RFC this week as well. But anyway, so that's it. That's the show.
Okay, what last thing? Just because Nicole just reminded me about it, talking about Turtles. Just want to let any UK listeners know Turtles Volume 1 is out next week, collecting for 6 issues. So if
go
you have felt
it.
Deprived, it is going to be available in the UK. You can get it now. So go, go, go.
Good job.
Like I said, that was my favorite comic last year, and last week's didn't disappoint either. So
good deal.
Still
all right. So there you go. That's the show. Thanks so much for joining us. TFRadio.net, fanboyversus.com is the website you want to look for. Check us out. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.